I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I've been on vacation for the past week. A fantastic trip, a great trip. I'm going to talk a little bit about some experiences that I had there, some interesting things that kind of tie into this radio show. But I am back, and so for this week and ongoing from 9 to 11 o'clock on weekdays, you will still be getting the story behind the story, the truth behind the headlines, the lying mainstream media, and the ridiculous two-party propaganda. I've got a great clip of that today as well. So welcome to Central Mississippi's safe space here for independent thinkers. As I said, I've been on vacation. I was really hoping that by the time I got back, the whole Mueller report thing would be settled. But apparently, we're still talking about it. It was just a dream, dared to dream that maybe that political theater would be off the front pages, but of course it is not. So I've got some news on that today. Really, I've got a ton of stuff to talk about. Show will be a little shortened today. Got a Braves game today at 10:30, one of their day games. So we'll squeeze everything into this next hour and a half. And what we don't get to today, we'll get to tomorrow. I appreciate people who contacted me last week, didn't realize that I was out, and I had asked about the podcast. You can get these shows. They'll start appearing again on Apple Podcast this week. You can search for The Mike Madison Show, or you can go to WYAB.com, scroll down, find my radio show page, and it'll take you to the Podbean place where I host my podcast. That is themikemadisonshow.podbean.com. So I appreciate people actually missing the show for a week. A couple of things that I ran into that I thought were very interesting. I'm going to talk about this a little bit about my trip on my health show on Wednesday. I just did 5 days, 4 nights in the Bahamas, and it cost me about probably close to around $300 for the entire thing. Now, I don't know if anybody has been to the Bahamas anytime recently. It is not cheap. It is not an inexpensive place to go. But I have some good friends out there, and was able to tag along on a trip. Again, I'll talk about it a little bit on the health show on Wednesday, because people who listen to the Hump Day Health segment every Wednesday, where we talk about natural health news you can use, might be surprised at whose nickel I went to the Bahamas on. But there were a couple things that took place. Just absolutely a beautiful place. Had some great experiences. Swam with the dolphins, which is, I don't know, feels like a really cheesy thing for a vacationer to do. Kind of sounds a little bit like a chick thing, actually, when you first think about it. One of the greatest experiences. Really, really interesting. When I was doing this, went for a day while we had this swim with the dolphins. I met a young couple standing in line in front of us. They were part of our little group that was going in to do this, and they were very, very sweet. I noticed a Hispanic accent, so I talked to them for a little bit. We first just kind of talked about what was going on in the islands, had a little bit of conversation while we were killing time, and then it came out they were from Venezuela. Of course, I got extremely excited about that. I think my face physically lit up as I was very curious to hear about them. And the first thing that I want to remind everybody, because I think as Americans, we don't think about these things, but this was a young couple, a sweet young couple, like sweet young couples from the United States. They were off on a vacation, and they were normal people wanting to go off and experience the islands and go for a swim with the dolphins. They are just like you and I. And see, we forget about these things because our foreign policy establishment in the United States gets us to think about people as just those over there. and the consequences of what we do don't really matter because we've got goals that are so important and we forget about the people who are actually affected. Well, I had a little bit of a conversation with them, and they're not really happy with their president, Nicolas Maduro. They do not think that he is a great leader. They see mistakes that have been made. They see some of the consequences of socialism. While we didn't really talk about the structure itself, they're not big fans of Maduro. But they're really not happy with the United States. Now, they don't blame the people of the United States, but they do not understand why the Americans get to pick who their president is. They're a little mystified by this, and I am too. So we had a nice conversation, but I bring it up because that was, you know, I don't get a lot of opportunities for man-on-the-street talks with people from Venezuela, and this was my chance to do this. And people need to remember, when we're dropping bombs in Yemen or Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or Libya, or if we're threatening Venezuela or North Korea or any other countries, that there are normal people there that just love their children. There are young couples there that just want to go on vacation and live their lives. And we somehow turn them into just others. They're collateral damage, maybe. And I saw these kids there and realized that the collateral damage of what's going on in Venezuelan society, much of it a manifestation of failed socialist policies, to be sure, but exacerbated tremendously by what the United States foreign policy team, the war horrors of every administration of the past 50 years, 60 years, caused these people a tremendous amount of suffering. So I thought that was interesting. And I also had a very interesting conversation with a taxi driver in the Bahamas. Talked to a lot of people about things, and I didn't bring up politics. It was a wonderful detox. I got away from email. I got away from my phone. It's what everybody needs from time to time. But just in talking to her, she was giving us some of the history of the island as we were driving around and telling us about a few things. And then she got to talking about illegal immigration to the Bahamas. And she was extremely vocal about the problems they're having right now with illegal immigration. And primarily, it is the Haitians that she says are the problem. She talked about anchor babies. She talked about the fact that the police force there, a lot of Haitians have come over to the Bahamas and have infiltrated. One of the things that their parents tell kids to do is join the police force or join the, what I guess is their border control agencies. And so the border control agencies will get a heads up. If Haitians are trying to come across the water and land at a beach on the Bahamas somewhere, the Haitians within the border patrol are sent to the other side of the island for something so that these Haitians can sneak on. She talked a lot about the cost of illegal immigration. Now, of course, this is a native Bahamian. She's a black woman. And the Haitians that were coming are black people as well. And what it shows is that every country struggles with this stuff. And that having a national pride in your country, she, being a native Bahamian, is proud of the culture and wants to maintain that within the Bahamas, doesn't want people coming illegally into her country. She talked about the cost of the illegals. She talked about the fact that the Bahamian government won't fix the problem and the frustration that the native Bahamians have about the fact that there is this unfettered illegal immigration, that they can't afford these people coming into their shores. And it was just very interesting to me. Having an affinity for the culture of your country is not racist. See, people on the left will tell you that if you talk against unfettered illegal immigration, that it's because you're a racist. But this shows you, and this woman was not prompted by me. I was actually, and I'll go ahead and confess this, I was on vacation with a Democrat. Well, she's been a Democrat, but I've worked on her some and really got her to pretty much understand the political theater of the two-party system. And she's kind of joining me in the libertarian idea of things, that nobody is suited to rule our lives. Neither one of these parties is up to the task of controlling 328 million Americans. But neither one of us prompted this kind of a tirade. She wasn't angry, but she was certainly concerned and very adamant about the fact that her country was being invaded by these Haitians who do not seek to assimilate, but they have their own culture, and that she was very concerned for her country. And that's just That's a level of nationalism, of just pride of your culture, which is what a lot of Americans have here. And yet you're called racist if you call out the unfettered illegal immigration here. It is not racist. To all you people on the left, it's not racist to be proud of your culture and to be proud of your country and to want it to retain its unique culture. And this is around the world. The Greeks are going through this right now with the immigration across the Mediterranean from the North African countries in the Middle East that have been ravaged by war. Same for the people of Hungary and the people of Sweden who are opposed to unfettered illegal immigration. These are not racists. These are people who appreciate their culture. They're native to a country, and they just want to see their borders secured. And some immigration, if it is done orderly and consciously, most everybody would accept. But it was just very interesting to hear a black woman just really tee off about black immigrants coming to that country. She sounded like a Donald Trump supporter here in the United States, but she was in no way, shape, or form some kind of a racist. And she said just as much. So it was that was pretty interesting. Anyway, you got a lot to get to today. There's the tariff wars. The trade war with China is heating up. Some interesting stuff on that. Donald Trump made some mention of American farmers, which have been struggling with some of the tariff stuff. We're going to get to that. And Larry Kudlow makes an admission that, yeah, I wish more people understood. He's being kind of castigated for contradicting Donald Trump, but he's exactly right. And the American people need to understand what a trade war does to us. It may, again, the jury's still out. I'm not throwing Trump under the bus on this thing, but it's a dangerous game, and it's going to cost the American consumer. We should at least acknowledge the reality of that. I'll be right back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
Well, among the things that were not solved while I was away was the ongoing trade war with China. Now, I know Trump supporters are pretty firmly supporting Donald Trump in this, and the jury is still out. He could come away with something pretty big going forward. I have always had big problems with politicians that will not take short-term pain for long-term gain, but we don't know if we're going to have long-term gain from this. You know, the Chinese, when you've got a government like ours that runs up trillions of dollars of debt every single year, you need people to loan you that money. And so this is one of the problems that Donald Trump has, is that he's about 40 years late to the game in what some of the things he's trying to accomplish. And the Chinese aren't the largest holders of American debt, but they're not nothing. And a trade war with China, if they start dumping their U.S. treasuries and refuse to loan us any more money, then interest rates are going to rise. We're going to find the interest on our debt going up. The Chinese have got some hole cards on us. But I ran across this yesterday. These are some tweets from Donald Trump on the farming situation. This is a tough time for some farmers. And they have been one of the victims of this trade war. Now, again, we're all told, look, this is all going to accomplish a goal. And many of us that aren't in a business that is dramatically affected like this, it's pretty easy for us to sit back and say, well, we're going to give him the ability to negotiate this thing. We'll see how it turns out. But if your livelihood is based on exporting soybeans or corn or whatever else is sent over to China, then this is a tough time for you. Trump tweeted out, talks with China continue in a very congenial manner. There's absolutely no need to rush, as tariffs are now being paid to the United States by China of 25% on $250 billion worth of goods and products. These massive payments go directly to the Treasury of the U.S. I got to tell you, that's just simply not true. China's not paying the 25% tariffs. The American taxpayer, the consumer in the United States, companies that import are the ones paying these tariffs. He goes on to say the process has begun to place additional tariffs at 25% on the remaining $325 billion. The U.S. only sells China approximately $100 billion of goods and products, a very big imbalance. With the over $100 billion in tariffs that we take in, here we go. This was interesting, and I haven't really heard anybody comment on this. With the over $100 billion in tariffs that we take in, we will buy. Now, I want you to remember, too, we deal in facts here. We don't deal in partisanship. This show is not about worshiping person, politician, or party. This is just about dissecting the facts of what's going on in the world. The $100 billion that he mentions that we take in is taken in from American consumers and importers, companies here. Now, I'll get to a clip in just a second of Larry Kudlow where he says the Chinese are paying a price for this too. It's not helping them by any stretch of the imagination. But that $100 billion that they take in is essentially from U.S. taxpayers. A tariff, remember anytime you hear the word tariff, you need to think the word tax. With the over $100 billion in tariffs that we take in, we will buy agricultural products from our great farmers in larger amounts than China ever did and ship it to the poor and starving countries in the form of humanitarian assistance. In the meantime, we will continue to negotiate with China in the hopes that they do not again try to redo deal! So if you understand exactly what's going on, the tariffs that American consumers are going to be paying on these products, and believe me, they are filtering through. I don't know. I can't really point. I'm not a big consumer, to be honest with you. I don't buy a lot of stuff. So it hasn't really affected me noticeably. There's always inflation that they hide and things, but this is part of it. So $100 billion that's taken in from the American taxpayer is going to be used to bail out the farmers. And we're going to take that money and we're going to give it away to poor and starving countries. This is a farmer bailout. Now, you may be in favor of that. We all love our farmers. But we do need to understand that this is essentially a farmer bailout from U.S. taxpayer dollars due to the increased goods. And we still don't know what the success of this trade war is going to be. This was Larry Kudlow was on Chris Wallace, where at least somebody finally admitted that the truth of the matter is that U.S. consumers pay this. And, you can support Donald Trump as much as you want, but we need to hold his feet to the fire and be accurate about things. The Chinese are not paying the 25% tariffs. It is just not happening.
It's not China that pays tariffs. It's the American importers, the American companies that pay what in effect is a tax increase and oftentimes passes it on to U.S. consumers.
Fair enough. In fact, both sides will pay. Both sides will pay in these things. And of course, it depends.
If it's a tariff on goods coming into the country, the Chinese aren't paying.
No, but the Chinese will suffer GDP losses and so forth. With respect to a diminishing export market and goods that they may need for their own
I understand that, but
economy.
The president says China pays the tariffs. They may suffer consequences, but it's U.S. businesses and U.S. consumers who pay, correct?
Yes, to some extent.
Yeah. So there you go. So Larry Kudlow was really probably against this trade war. He was brought in. The idea being Larry Kudlow was a big talking head on CNBC for many, many, many years. And he was against this trade war with China, and the thinking being that he was brought into the administration to kind of get him firmly into the into the fold and get him on the side of this, so he wasn't talking against it in CNBC. So it's been kind of against his instincts. He is a free trader. Now, I do agree, as I say, Donald Trump's about 40, 50 years late to the game. It has been unfair trade with China. They do tariff some of our things, and we haven't tariffed their stuff. I think Trump's got some standing to want to renegotiate a trade deal with China. It has been lopsided. Larry Kudlow calls that free trade. He's been for the status quo. So it's an interesting It's an interesting situation with him where he is. But the bottom line is that this trade war is not quick and easy to win, as Donald Trump said. The American consumers can take it on the chin. We just have to understand that. Maybe this works out for the best. I'm giving Trump time on this to see. I'm a little watching the market gyrations. The market, as I was coming on air, was 400 and something points down. The Chinese have retaliated with new tariffs on American goods. The other problem that we have, number one, is that China holds a lot of U.S. debt, and they are constantly loaning us money. They make all these extra dollars because of this trade imbalance, these trade surpluses that they have with the United States, but they take those dollars, all those extra dollars they've got over there, and they use a lot of them to loan back to us at interest by buying U.S. bonds. And if they stop doing that, that's going to be a little bit of a problem for us. They're not the largest holder of U.S. debt, but they've got a lot of it. And if they start dumping it or stop buying, then that's going to be a problem for us. So we'll see exactly how this works out. But the idea of a quick and easy to win trade war is just not proving to be real true. The other problem that you have is culturally with the Chinese, and I believe this is the case with many Asian nations, but particularly the Chinese, it's very important that they save face, that they not be seen to have lost something. And it's going to be interesting to see. They do have a lot to lose. We're a very big consumer for them. They've got a lot of people over there in that horrible communist system that they've got to kind of pacify. They got to keep them at work. They don't need them in the streets raising a ruckus against the Communist Party that's let them down. So they do have to pacify a lot of people. They have all kinds of weird things. They can print money just like we print money. They've done all kinds of... If you've never seen the ghost cities in China, do an internet search of Chinese ghost cities. China has built several cities the size of Manhattan where nobody lives. These were just projects done to keep people working, to boost Chinese GDP. It's absolutely astounding. You will see they've got one city, I believe, that looks like London, with English architecture, and there's basically nobody living there. The streets are empty. They're just these giant cities, mega cities, with nobody living in it. They've got a very, very odd system over there. But the Chinese, we'll see that their culture does not give them a lot of wiggle room. They have to be seen as not yielding to the United States. And so the negotiations with them has got to be kind of tough because it's pretty difficult to beat the Chinese into submission because their culture does not allow that. We'll see how it goes. I got an interesting clip. I've got a couple things about the Mueller. I am not going to cover all of the machinations of the Donald Trump Jr. being subpoenaed and, you know, what Republican Burr is, just all of the stuff. It's so boring to me, and it's so much political theater, and I'm going to show that to you when I come back. I've said many times that if the roles were reversed, if the spying by the Department of Justice and the CIA and the FBI had been done against a Democrat, then Sean Hannity's talking points would be 180 degrees, because he's not a principled person, he's a party person. And I'll show you an example of exactly how hypocritical the left is when you come back. I've got a clip, kind of a montage. Right now they're going after Attorney General Barr because he won't testify again, and they're saying he's not releasing the reports, and they're going after him. Well, if we have short memories here in the United States, but there was a time, I believe it was after Fast and Furious, that Eric Holder was being held up in contempt because of his failure to comply with Congress about an investigation into the Fast and Furious. It might have been other issues as well, but I believe Fast and Furious was the gun running operation where the all-knowing intelligence agencies of the United States gave guns to the Mexican cartels to supposedly track them, using air quotes here in the studio. And we're going to listen to the media's reaction to when the Republicans were going after a Democrat attorney general. And it just shows you that this is just political theater. Representative Louis Gohmert also said something that I found kind of interesting. It seems like he's missing a part of history. We'll do both of those things when we come back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 1039 WYAB.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales. consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
I don't do a whole lot of commentary on the stock market on the show, really as much as I'd like to do. I don't know if people are necessarily interested in it, but I'm fascinated by financial markets. They're not working as they have in the past. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors in our market right now, and everybody who's got a 401k or investments in the stock market has certainly been pleased with the last several months. It's been quite a bull run. But it's the Uber, while I was gone, Uber went public. And this company is mystifying to me. Now, number one, the initial investors in Uber have lost a lot of money. The IPO originally spiked, and it is down significantly from its even from its IPO price. And I believe that the financial news report that just came on said that this is only the second trading day. But Uber has become this big disruptor, and everybody's familiar with what Uber is. What I am staggered by with Uber, it's an app. Now, they've got some infrastructure. It's a big app. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of employees or contractors, I guess, these drivers. And, you know, they've got Uber Eats now. I mean, it's a real company with a lot of people. But essentially, this is a company that convinced a bunch of people to use their own cars, paying their own insurance, paying for their own gas, to transport people from one place to another. Now, as a libertarian, I think it's a great idea. It's just kind of paired up one voluntary rider with one voluntary driver to get somewhere for what somebody thinks is a reasonable amount to go. I'm not talking about surge pricing. If you've ever tried to go anywhere in an Uber in surge pricing, get ready. It gets pretty expensive. But it's an interesting thing. Yet they lose billions of dollars a year. A billion is a lot of money. I don't know. We talk so much. When we talk about, you know, corporate finances or the government finances, billion almost doesn't seem like much now because most of the things we talk about now are in the trillions of dollars. Got a $2 trillion infrastructure budget. $1 billion is a lot of money. Ask the person who's trying to crowdfund the wall. He's got $22 million after 4 months from something like 200,000 contributors, and he only got to $22 million. His goal was $1 billion. $1 billion is a lot of dollars. Uber has been losing billions of dollars every quarter, billions and billions of dollars on an annualized basis. They don't have to even provide cars, insurance, gas, nothing. They're running an app that pairs a rider with a driver, and somehow they've managed to burn through just tens of billions of dollars in creating this thing. I don't know. I've been a bootstrap entrepreneur several times in my life. And I find it hard to believe. I think it's just when that Silicon Valley money starts sloshing around, it's easy just to go and spend it. These guys who are the entrepreneurs, and particularly when it's in this day and time of disruptive technologies, it's the same thing with things like Twitter. They just lose billions and billions of dollars, yet Silicon Valley investors and then the public gets sucked up into it too, because these names become so big that we think, you know, the idea is always that it's just about to really monetize itself. If Twitter can just get enough users and enough engagement, then they'll be able to do this or that. They'll sell ads, they'll do whatever. With that many users, they're bound to make money. And a lot of these things feel very familiar to those of us that lived through the dot-com crash, which was, you know, pets.com, I guess, is the big example that everybody uses. Pets.com was essentially losing money on every customer, but they felt like if they could just get enough customers, and they're cornering the market on all these things. This feels very dot-com-ish to me, and the Uber IPO was one of the biggest flops of an IPO of a company like that in recent memory. So it's interesting. I got to tell you, though, I think I could get on the board of Uber and start looking through their books and find ways that maybe they're wasting a few billion dollars a year. Use the app, pair people together, and keep your overhead low, and you might actually have a real company. The other problem with Uber is that they've got a ton of upstart competitors now. Drivers have been unhappy with Uber. Lyft has suffered the same fate on their IPO just a few weeks ago. So there's a lot of competition in that market. So if it's easy to get in and disrupt an entire industry, you know, those first market leaders either need to corner the market and really be dominant, or they are prone to being eaten. I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'm going to show this hypocrisy on the left-wing media. But it just shows, and this is why I just don't do a lot of this Mueller coverage report. It's political theater designed to feed the two bases hatred. And on top of that, I'm going to give you an introduction that was very interesting. Matt Taibbi, the Rolling Stone reporter. Now, he is a progressive. He's a leftist, I believe. But he's a very good reporter, and he's written a book called, I think it's Hate Inc., something like that. And man, he nails it with the description of this book that you're going to hear in just a second. It is the pitting against each other, the way that the system pits us against each other. And so when you combine these two clips of how the left-wing liberal media portrayed it when the Republicans were going after Eric Holder versus the way they talk about the Democrats now going after William Barr, you can just see the hypocrisy. It's actually stunning. But that's what political theater is. It's designed to keep everybody in their party, to batten down the hatches and have us really lash out at one another, while if you don't notice it, the people at the top keep getting away with murder. I'll be right back with both of those. All night with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
One of the biggest problems that I see Americans having is they struggle to be consistent on anything. And the reason that is because we've been put into this hyper-partisan state by two political parties who derive tremendous power and control from corralling us into these two parties. So we can't be consistent, right? If a Republican does something, it's good, and if a Democrat does something, it's bad, or vice versa. If a Democrat does something, it's good, or if a Republican does something, it's bad. If Barack Obama had started peace negotiations with Kim Jong-un, the media and the left would be going overboard trying to get him the Nobel Peace Prize and talking about what a wonderful leader he is and how he's bringing peace to the planet. But Donald Trump does it, and they say he's approaching dictators. He's cozying up with strongmen. And there's no level of consistency on anything. I try to be very consistent. The facts take me where the facts take me. If Donald Trump does something good, it's good. If Donald Trump does something bad, it's bad. Yet that is not the consensus opinion. The left sees everything that Donald Trump... Donald Trump has done things, criminal justice reform. The left should be falling all over themselves to thank him for sparing minorities some of the unfairness of the justice system. But they're not. They give him no credit for that. They just still call him a racist. There's just Trump derangement syndrome on both sides. But this hyper-partisanship has been going on for a while. And I'm telling you right now, had the FBI and CIA and Deep State and the DOJ and the rest of them gone after the Hillary Clinton administration, had she won, then Sean Hannity would be defending every night the FBI, the DOJ. All the names would change. All of the stances would change because there's no consistency, because we view everything now through a partisan lens. And that's why facts get lost. Nobody cares. You just want your team to win. You want your guy to win. Now, what happened to Donald Trump was bad. It was an attempted coup. There's really no doubt about that. The problem, most people don't realize, that this stuff's been going on for a long time. And unfortunately for Republicans and conservatives out there, we kind of planted the seeds of this whole thing by cheering things like the Patriot Act, because our boy George Bush told us it was a good idea to do warrantless wiretaps and covert surveillance, and we gave all the intelligence agencies all these new powers, and we cheered for it because they called it the Patriot Act, and we love to be patriots. And so we've been led to this. But, and it's funny to think Hillary Clinton would have been targeted by the deep state, because Hillary Clinton is the deep state. But I'm just using this for illustrative purposes. Had that happened, Mark Levin and the rest of the conservative top tier guys would be on a completely opposite side of this thing. Ditto with the mainstream media. Right now, the mainstream media is up in arms. They want to see Bob Barr held accountable. The Democrats are going to investigate him for contempt of Congress or whatever other ridiculous charges they've got against him or anybody else in the Trump administration. They were singing a different tune when the Republicans were threatening to hold Eric Holder in contempt of Congress. Just listen to this and juxtapose it to where the media is right now in their fervor to go after William Barr.
Given what we know about the Republican Party and the way the House of Representatives conducts its...
Again, these are old clips. These are old clips from the major... This is Chris Hayes on MSNBC. These are old clips from when the Republicans were going to charge Eric Holder with contempt.
Given what we know about the Republican Party and the way the House of Representatives conducts itself when run by Republicans and with a Democrat in the White House, it shouldn't really count as news when a House committee finds the Democratic Attorney General in contempt of Congress.
Every single Republican voted to hold the Attorney General in contempt over this crazy conspiracy theory.
Tell the that's Rachel Maddow, who's been pushing the Russia hoax conspiracy theory for 2 years now. But she had a different take. Back then, it was, this is the world we live in. And if people could just see through this and realize you're not being served, you people on the left are not being served by your left-wing media. You people on the right are not being served by conservative media. You're just being corralled.
Over this crazy conspiracy theory.
Tell the Republicans to stop this witch hunt now. He's right.
Why go ahead with a contempt vote?
Look, there are certain internal documents that are not Congress's business.
How about that one? Yeah, Bob Barr says, well, he redacted 1.5% of the Mueller report. Back then, when Eric Holder was withholding documents, the mainstream media said, well, there's just some things that aren't any of our business.
Well, why?
It just looks like more of our broken politics and vicious fights now out in the open.
A party in the Congress that does just about nothing to create jobs or to help people without jobs decided the best way to do their job is to shower the Obama administration with subpoenas.
That's Chris Matthews. Oh my gosh, how do these people live with themselves?
If you are a person who watches Fox News all day, it is possible that you have been marinating in this conspiracy theory for long enough now that this seems feasible.
Is this sort of stop and frisk at the highest level? Go at the Attorney General, get him to empty his pockets. It looks like stop and frisk, doesn't it? Let me finish with my personal views of the stop and frisk thing. And I don't mean to use this term too much, but it's almost like a stop and frisk.
For a lot of people, this is Republican versus Democrat, and they say this is just theater. It amounts to nothing.
It is a distraction. It is politics writ large in Washington, according to most people.
This is really much more to be filed in the category of politics than law.
This is contempt kabuki. This is a classic case in Washington of where you stand is a matter of where you sit. When the Republicans have the White House, they love executive privilege.
Yeah, so this is, it's political theater. That's exactly what it is, and it's doing exactly what it was designed to do. This is Chris Hedges. He's interviewing Matt Taibbi, and he does kind of a description. I'm going to get this book. I'm very interested to read what Matt Taibbi has to say. He is a good investigative journalist. He is a leftist, so just be warned at the end of this, there's going to something that's going to trigger the Trump people. I'm hoping that within this book, because this is just it's a minute, 22 seconds synopsis of this book. It mentions Trump. But Matt Taibbi is pretty good about pointing out the power-hungry Democrats as well. He's one of these liberals who saw through the Russiagate stuff, and he's pretty intellectually consistent. I disagree with him on a bunch of different policy stuff, but at least he tries to get to the facts. But listen to this description, and I got to tell you, I'm going to read this book for sure, about how the American people are so propagandized to, we're brought into this hyper-partisan thing where we can't see facts for what they are, but instead have to look at everything through a political lens. It is designed to keep us exactly where we are, which is just at loggerheads with each other while the machine at the top just keeps on rolling. I just thought this was really a great description, and again, has got me wanting to read this book.
Welcome back to part two of our discussion of the decay that has beset American journalism with Matt Taibbi, the author of Hate Incorporated, How and Why the Media Makes Us Hate One Another. Last week, we discussed the shattering of the old forms of media manipulation and the rise of a new media landscape built around demographic silos that sell internecine conflict. The result, Taibbi points out, is a bifurcated public that is addicted to hating each other. This new media landscape still manufactures consent, but by setting group against group, a consumer version of what George Orwell in 1984 called the 2 minutes of hate. Our opinions and prejudices are skillfully catered to and reinforced, aided by a detailed digital analysis of our proclivities and habits and sold back to us. It is, Taibbi writes, packaged anger just for you. The result is political impotence, a fractured and disempowered public, crippled by hate and fear and mesmerized by the fake dissent of the culture wars and conspiracy theories rather than genuine dissent. The moral swamp is fertile soil for demagogues such as Donald Trump, who is a creation of this media burlesque and feeds our emerging corporate totalitarianism.
Now, again, that's a swipe at Trump there. I am certainly hoping Matt Taibbi is a pretty reasonable guy. That he also points out, I mean, the same thing happens with Hillary Clinton. You know, when Hillary Clinton didn't get elected, it's because the population is sexist or ignorant or we're infested with white supremacists. I mean, you know, these are the narratives driven. And one of the catchphrases in there that I think is right on is political impotence. And that's what's happened to the American people. We're so busy fighting with our liberal neighbor that we don't affect any change because we won't clean our own houses. The Democrats won't clean their house. They should know, and they're not all stupid. Most of them should know that Hillary Clinton is a thug. She's a criminal. She's a warmonger. Yet they have to line up behind her because they've been convinced that Trump is so bad. And this happens on both sides of the aisle. It serves only the top. We become politically impotent, and that's why you don't have the wall. That's why we don't rein in debt. That's why we don't tackle any of the tough things, because we're too busy just being addicted to outrage and being mad with each other. We're stuck there. Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
You tell me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show. I am your host, Mike Madison, back from vacation. Got a shortened show today. Your Mississippi Braves will be playing a morning game today, so we're going to cut out of here about 10:30, but got some other things to cover right up my wheelhouse here. I wanted to thank, I'm not a fan of these people in any way, shape, or form, but I guess I owe a little bit of thanks to Mike Pence, Elliot Abrams, and the Whale and the Walrus, Mike Pompeo, and John Bolton for not invading Venezuela while I was out of town. I was actually kind of anxious about that as this coup continues to flounder in Venezuela, this one that they have set up and are orchestrating. And I thought, God, I'm going to hate it if I'm not on the air when we finally make our final push into Venezuela. So it was considerate of them to hold off for a period of a week while I was away. And then I come back and I see this story. Venezuela's self-declared president Juan Guaido said on Saturday that he has instructed his political envoy in Washington to immediately open relations with the U.S. military. Guaido asked his ambassador, Carlos Vecchio, to sit down with Pentagon officials for, quote, direct communications to discuss, quote, coordination, unquote, of efforts to remove Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, whose 2018 re-election Guaido claims is illegitimate. Quote, We have instructed our ambassador to meet immediately with the U.S. Southern Command and its admiral to establish a direct relationship, unquote, Guaido told a Caracas crowd during a pro-opposition rally. Quote, we have said from the beginning that we will use all of the resources at our disposal to build pressure. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, Juan Guaido should be directing U.S. Southern Command, shouldn't he? Shouldn't he have direct access to our military? Shouldn't he get direct access to our kids, our troops, and our tax dollars? I mean, the guy did get 90,000 votes from Venezuelans in his district. He got 90,000 votes. He should be directing exactly what's going on with our military, certainly be involved in it. I'm not saying he's commandeering the whole thing, but he certainly should be given access to our kids and our, you know, our blood and our treasure. I mean, Saudi Arabia and Israel get to do it. So why not little Juan Guaido, who again got 90,000 votes in Venezuela, and he is now recognized by the U.S. and 50 of our vassal states as the new rightful president of Venezuela. So our kids should fight and die for whoever gets John Bolton's stamp of approval, I guess. This is essentially the war whores, the whale and the walrus, pimping out our military. Saying, oh, you want to effect a coup down there? Now we're doing it on behalf of, yeah, there's other interests. The oil companies also have their hand in this thing. They want their hands on that sweet Venezuelan crude. And this is where I say it's so difficult for most Americans to be consistent, because I got to tell you, I just kind of get the feeling that if Hillary Clinton was threatening to invade Venezuela and overthrow another government, most Republicans would be pretty upset about it. But we ignore it. We have to just kind of whistle past the graveyard because our guy's in charge and he's doing it. This was a clip on Tucker Carlson that you'll hear nowhere else talking about the situation in Venezuela.
Anya Parampil is a reporter who just spent a month in Venezuela reporting from the ground there, and she joins us here in studio. Anya, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So what do you make of the news coverage of this?
Your viewers won't be shocked to hear this, Tucker, but the news media, the fake news media, are lying about the situation in Venezuela. Let me put it for you this way. Imagine if Hillary Clinton had refused to admit defeat after losing to President Trump in 2016 and banded together a group of 24 U.S. soldiers and attempted to take the White House by force. I don't think she'd be walking freely on the streets the way Juan Guaido is walking right now in Caracas. And I certainly think the news media would be calling it rightfully a coup. And let me just tell you, when it comes to what's happening on the ground there, I can tell you, I was there for a month earlier this year. The opposition has no popular support. Juan Guaido proved today once again that he will only ride in to power on the back of a U.S. tank. And what's more, we hear about a humanitarian crisis there, Tucker, but what we never hear is that is the intended result of U.S. sanctions, which have targeted Venezuela since 2015. Sanctions which, according to a report that was released just last week by the Center for Economic and Policy Research, has led to the deaths of 40,000 Venezuelans and will lead to the deaths of thousands more if these sanctions aren't overturned. President Trump, if he truly cared about the American or the Venezuelan people and the American people for that matter, he would end this disastrous policy. He would end the sanctions and he would look into John Bolton's eyes, into Elliot Abrams' eyes and Mike Pompeo's eyes and say, you are fired. You are leading me down a disastrous path. Another war for oil. Something the president said.
You are passionate.
He was celebrated by the American people when he said Iraq was a mistake. And now he's willing to do it again.
But it is a bipartisan thing. I mean, Biden came out today and said he agrees.
Absolutely, it is a bipartisan issue.
So, it's interesting. It would be interesting to know why that is. I believe in an open debate. And I'm not sure I agree with everything you said, but I'm glad that you could say it here. And you were just there, and I don't think you'd be allowed at any other show to say that.
No, I certainly don't.
You would never out of time.
So I really appreciate you opportunity, because President Trump promised to drain the swamp, and he flooded his national security team with that exact swamp.
Well, I agree with that, actually. Anya, thank you very
much. Thank you, Chuck.
It is true. It's unfortunate. I don't understand it, but it is true. We've got some of the biggest swamp critters in our foreign policy team that have been around for quite some time. Now, you'll also hear that the U.S. sanctions on Venezuela started in 2015. See, these things, they seem to outlast administrations of both parties. They started under Barack Obama, continued, and now exacerbated under Donald Trump. The report she was talking about. Center for Economic and Policy Research did a 27-page paper from economist Mark Weisbot and Jeffrey Sachs, who determined that sanctions have, quote, inflicted very serious harm to human life in Venezuela. Again, I refer you back to my opening segment where I say, I met this really cute couple. Young adults, probably mid-20s, I would guess, something like that, vacationing down in the Bahamas. They're just like you and I. But we're taught here in America, because we haven't seen wars, they don't come to our borders, so it's very easy for us to just ignore them and go to our churches and worship the Prince of Peace while we just allow our leadership to wreak havoc around the world. But these are just normal people. This report says the sanctions are depriving Venezuelans of life-saving medicines, medical equipment, food, and other essential imports. American sanctions are deliberately aiming to wreck Venezuela's economy and thereby lead to regime change. Now, here's where people get lost. Yes, socialism fails everywhere it's tried. Democrats, please, for the love of God, go and research history. Find us where socialism has succeeded. And don't point to these European countries who have tilted socialism, because what you'll find is they're tilting back to capitalism because they're starting to see the heavy price of their socialist ways. And the only reason they had the luxury of going socialist in all these European countries was that they'd become so prosperous from free markets and capitalism that they had a standard of living. They started to just give away the store, much like the United States has done. This ultimately leads to ruin. So yes, socialism does not work. Nicolas Maduro is not a good guy. And you can have this consistent view in your mind. Again, Americans struggle with consistency. We can understand that Maduro is not a good guy and that a socialist structure will ultimately lead to shortages of this kind. But to deny the fact that the United States is trying to exacerbate the situation by blockading them, cutting them off from all world markets. They've got the largest oil reserves in the world, I believe. It's either first or second. I think it may be first. And understand that if you stop them from even being able to export their main product, you are going to exacerbate the situation. So all of the headlines you see, all of the people that are dying there, the idea that they're losing weight and they're taking to the streets and they're unhappy and all this, it's not all Maduro. It's not all the socialism. Socialism takes a little while to collapse. And if you look at what's happened in France, I may get to that in a second. The French have got so much more courage than the Americans these days. I didn't think I'd ever be saying that on air, but it's true. If you look at France, they took this slide towards socialism over the past several decades themselves, and the French people there, as they see the cost of this and they see the taxes going up to pay for it, they've taken to the streets for 6 months now. They've been on the streets every weekend, sometimes during the week too, in tremendous protests that have actually affected change. That's the way socialism undoes itself. Eventually, the people catch on and they realize, oh, this utopia they promised us didn't work, and they start to affect their own change. That's kind of the lifestyle cycle of some of these socialist things. But because they are sitting on all this oil, the war horrors, the whale and the walrus, Bolton and Pompeo, led by Mike Pence, unfortunately, for you Pence fans out there, I got to tell you, he's got a sticky little finger in this thing, too, along with Marco Rubio. They have decided to punish the Venezuelan people, punish people like this young couple that I met last week, punish them, thinking that if they just starve them enough, if they just kill enough of them, if they cause enough misery in the country, that then they will rise up. And that also has never worked. Sanctions are an act of war. If you can imagine another country cutting off the United States from world markets to affect some political change, you can imagine the outrage you would feel for the country that was behind that. Trump campaigned on a non-interventionalist foreign policy, from withdrawing from these things, and he has hired two rabid dogs to run his foreign policy. People are dying in Venezuela, not just because of socialism. Socialism certainly takes its toll. A country will fall under socialism. It will be forced to change or go bankrupt. It will experience real hardship. But the hardship Venezuela is seeing right now is largely at the hands of Western powers who have cut them off from the rest of the world in order to prove a point and get a puppet in there so that our oil companies can get in there. You can have that consistent view. You can understand that socialism is wrong. You can dislike Maduro and still not want to see us be the ones that tip them over the edge in an accelerated form. People are dying there. Normal people. People who want to see their kids' school play on Friday, who want to see their kids graduate from high school, who want to go to a soccer game, who want to run out for a movie and see dinner. They're the same as we are. Yet Elliot Abrams and John Bolton, Mike Pompeo have convinced you that they love these people and they're just trying to get them their constitutional rights back. All they have to do, if they starve them long enough, maybe we can get a good government in there. It's a sick, sick foreign policy. I don't care if it's under a Democrat administration or Republican administration, Trump, Obama, Clinton. I don't care. It's sick. And this is where the political infighting keeps us to where, well, you may be right, Mike. I mean, it is a little, I don't know why we're supposed to be involved in Venezuela, but I don't dare speak up around my group of friends because they're Trump supporters, and that would be kind of disloyal to Donald Trump. So we don't dare say anything about that. And the thing is, I don't think Trump has an appetite for this. He is being convinced by these warmongers. For some reason, he is going along with this, but he speaks pretty sparingly about the Venezuela stuff. And the next thing up is Iran. I smell a false flag going on right now. A Soviet tanker, some sabotage of Soviet oil things. Tensions are heating up. We're sending an armed armada to the area surrounding Iran. I'm telling you, I smell a false flag. They want that war too. Donald Trump needs to fire both of these guys before it's too late.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.